The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you. In which our heroes draw a card.
Alright, time for another drawing. Assuming that some frankly fairly dodgy mental mathematics is correct, the episode that we draw now will be our 6 month episode-iversary.
That's totally a thing.
Yep.
Yeah, not as sure that that's a real word as it was when I started saying it, to be honest.
It is now.
Okay, so who wants to draw?
I got the box, so someone else draws.
My turn.
Okay.
Ian is frantically waving his hands like a deranged Muppet.
I shall apply some variety of motion, and then we will draw. That's probably enough.
All right.
What do we got?
This is a long one.
Oh, you'll be wanting a word with Jones the Necromancer. He says it wasn't him. Says you want to talk to Jones the Mad Scientist. I hate this village. I have no idea what I'm going to shorten that to for the files.
The Jones episode.
Ooh, nice. Okay.
Jones.
Big Red Couch, live from Jonestown.
You went there. You actually went there.
And with that, see you next time, folks.
Bye.
Some days later.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 14 of The Big Red Couch, which we're putting under the heading of I Hate This Village, because it's much simpler than the actual card. On the mics today, we have Kev.
Tonya.
Ben.
And Craig.
And here we go. Who would like to start off?
I can, before my voice gives out completely. I've got a bit of a sore throat.
Go forth!
It is awesome, however, that you have taken on my con crud from the previous weekend.
Yeah, fuck you very much.
That's what everyone needs, someone to have their diseases for them.
It's really convenient.
Thank you, Dorian Gray.
Anyway, we kind of got the idea from the card that this would be set in a rural village, probably Wales, because Jones, everything. So you've got Necromancer, Mad Scientist, Grave Robber, Reanimator, you name it, if it's been in a bad movie. These people all live near this village. And I kind of had this idea of the rolling hills and the eerie mist that comes up so often in monster movies from the 40s, 50s, 60s. Mm-hmm. And the idea that absolutely everybody in the village is played by or has the same face as Bela Lugosi or Boris Karloff or Lon Chaney Jr. So these people, it's that village.
Right.
Two castles next to each other, one that has Dr. Frankenstein as played by, I forget who.
Gene Wilder.
No, that's across the way. I figure they're across the valley from each other. So you have Dr. Frankenstein. Yeah, exactly. And have them sort of shaking their fists at each other across the valley and all the rest of things. Okay, so you've got this setting. Absolutely everybody is called Jones, including the player characters, who are playing signature hunters. I'm kind of...
Fanboys.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I'm pitching it more like birding. So you have people who are trying to make the perfect list of signatures from the perfect sets of stars. So you have these people who have been drawn together because they've heard a rumor of a particular star of the silver screen who many years ago pulled a Bridget Bardot and says, I want to be alone, and moved to apparently rural Wales.
Well, if you're going to be alone...
Yeah, so you have a fairly simple investigation game of people wandering around, and the fun is coming from the set pieces of just how ridiculous this place is. I kind of had the idea that it'd be kind of a one-shot with characters like Rita Jones, detective, Arnold Jones, psychic, Victor Jones, circus strongman, Mary Bell Jones, animal psychologist, and Parvati Jones, teacher. So, yeah.
That sounds cool.
You're not pitching this as a serious game, are you?
I don't do serious games, really.
Just checking. Had you had any thoughts as to system?
Or none is that whatsoever.
But Toon would work.
Yeah.
Like a fiend.
Toon would definitely work. I think this would probably be the first Toon game I've come across that wouldn't require constant in-sugaredness.
Trickster mode, engaged.
Yeah, and I normally imagine Toon as being something you can only really run if you're high on pixie sticks and no-dos.
Those were the days. I mean, that would be dreadfully irresponsible, and nobody should do that, listener.
There strikes me as being some sort of innate competition between the players to get the best signatures.
Yeah, maybe a little. They're also going to be collaborating a little bit for sightings of the elusive person, or possibly people, and you're going to have confusion over who the elusive person is because you've got so many of the same face cropping up in the village.
Mm. Oh, they share faces. They're not just the identifiably Gene. The Wilder clan, there are
actually
like...
Actually looks like Gene Wilder in Scary Hair Face.
But there's also the baker who looks like Gene Wilder.
Yep.
Oh, goodness. That would be confusing as all hell.
And all the people who look like Lon Chaney Jr., vaguely. Mm-hmm. All the people who look like Boris Karloff, vaguely.
Right.
That's awesome. Of course, there's only one Igor.
Is there? How would you tell?
Yeah, true. There what this seems.
Actually, no, you're quite right. There might be multiple Igors, and because there's Igor as played by Peter Lorre and Igor as played by...
Marty Feldman.
Igor.
Sorry, Igor.
Igor. Yeah.
That's really cool. And what we know from our experience by proxy of birders is that they are collaborative in weird and interesting ways.
Hmm.
If anyone's interested in the weird life of birders rather than birds, you can check out Ursula Vernon's blog. She's got some hilarious things there.
Stories about finding birds she couldn't identify and being shunned for seeing the perfect bird.
And by shunned we mean, simultaneously, I hate you and can I touch you? I've been looking for that bird for decades, sort of thing. It's fun.
Okay. I must admit that when I had a flash in my mind, an almost documentary-style thing of, we're here in this remote village, and we're looking for Dr. Frankenstein. We think we found him. Is it him? All right. We're going to see if we can get closer. all done in shaky handy cams, or hiding behind dustbins.
Okay,
and...
so we could use inspectors as well.
Anything that has a reality TV feel could
Absolutely.
Work. Primetime cinema... Maybe not so much, but...
Yes, if you suddenly realise that what you've done is snuck up on a baker.
That would be fun.
Or that drunk from Blazing Saddles.
I see.
Ah, it's Jones the drunk you'll be wanting.
Jones the drinking cowboy.
We don't know why he does that.
That is a genuinely bizarre idea.
Well done.
I win. Actually, I don't know if I win yet, because you guys haven't gone.
That level of bizarreness is a high bar to pass, but I could go next if people want.
Yep. Would you like to get it?
I would! Okay, my terrible idea starts from a similar place, but then goes rapidly sideways, as frequently happens, and I was thinking of it as kind of starting from the same rural Welsh town, because you have to, but then going in the direction of a hybrid of Eureka and Haven and Hot Fuzz... Maybe some side orders of John dies at the end and this book is full of spiders just for comedy value.
Yes, we know, Craig, it's a book you will never read because it's full of spiders. And it says on the cover, seriously, dude, don't touch it.
No, I was more thinking, oh, congratulations, in the past 10 seconds, you just gave me a bunch of extra things to put in the show notes. I hope you're happy.
Yes, yes I am. Anyway, yeah, so people are playing the police force of this town, and they're not locals.
So we're a police force that is not local to the town?
Oh, no. You live locally to the town. You're just not from here.
Right.
And in almost all cases, you don't want to be here. And people can come up with their own stories of how and why they were moved from wherever to being the police force of this small town. But similar idea to you, it is a town full of Joneses involved in mad science, necromancy, monsters and mayhem, all that kind of idea. They're far from the only citizens, but it's a much, much higher than average ratio of weird shit to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And the core axis on which things would be going is that you have crime start happening in town. Joneses are being affected. They don't like this. There's possibly clues and things that there might be conflict between normals and the Joneses in terms of the supernatural Joneses.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that's a complete red herring or anything else. But basically, system-wise, I would be thinking of using fate and kind of opening it up some so that you could have basically town stress. Or plot stress or something, if something happens, and then you roll for some level of how exacerbated it is. Does this lead to consequences for the town? Because realistically speaking, if we have a town full of mad sciences, necromancers, and all sorts of other things, you haven't lived until you've run from an outraged, pitchfork and flaming torch-wielding mob made up of mad scientists. That's just special.
That does sound like the Holy Grail of... having screwed up in this particular
exactly.
environment.
And so you've got people trying to sort this stuff out and keep things contained while building connections with the locals in the kind of Haven Eureka way. But you've also got the broader question of, why is this place here? How has nobody heard about this? Why are we here? I mean, in many cases, we know what we did because we screwed up in a fashion and then wound up transferred to Jonesville. The broader questions across the campaign would be, what the hell is going on behind all this? As well as, is one of these mad scientists, necromancers, reanimators, werewolves, etc., what are they building in here? Are they robbing the other supernaturals to build something? Is it just kids? What's the story?
Okay, so stuff is going missing.
Yeah.
And it's
crime is happening.
Trying to figure out who is taking the stuff and for what purpose.
Yeah, if stuff's being taken or anything else. I don't know the exact kind of crime, but you've got the day-to-day trying to keep a weird town from getting any weirder mixed with there's something else going on.
Okay.
In a broader thing.
It sounds like you could probably squeeze a reasonable short campaign out of an idea of crimes being committed that are linked in a way that implies that's preparing for other crimes. Or preparing for something else.
Yeah, I was thinking that it'd be interesting to have, I suppose, a little bit like Haven, that you've got the interlinked things, people who are into very, very weird stuff who are aware of each other, and then you've got all sorts of other people. So you've got possibilities for comedy tension, you've got possibilities for the conversation of, oh, it's Jones the Necromancer you'll be wanting.
There was an episode of Alcatraz, the TV show, not our episode. That caused some hilarity when we discovered that somebody had already had our idea and put it on TV and made it reasonably awesome.
And then got it cancelled.
There was an episode where there was one guy, one of the returnees, who would plan these elaborate heists that were kind of nested in some way. That's what it reminded me of.
Cool. I suppose the other benefit of using Fate is that if we're doing kind of a town generation thing, everyone's going to be collaboratively invested in building a weird and complex place. Who would you be interested in dealing with? Who would be a problem child in this scenario? So okay. You can get themes pulled in from all over.
Interesting.
You completely hulled my idea, unfortunately. I've got to say, the first thing I thought of was, yeah, a Eureka-esque enclave of mad scientist types. And the idea, not that I had any idea what specifically would go on in a game, but the notion that, yes, the secluded place, which is full of loonies, would make an interesting setting, at the very least. Eureka was the thing I got up to, but the webcomic Narbonic by Shannon K. Garrity is pretty much a story of a mad scientist and their minion, who's also the tech support guy, and their trials. The idea of multiplying that up, having multiple interactions of that sort would be interesting. Also, the follow-up that I've done with that, Skin Horse, which is about an organisation that rehabilitates the creations of mad scientists. Yeah, the receptionist.
Assuming they can be rehabilitated.
Well, to a degree. They've got the sentient attack helicopter, who is a gigantic online troll.
They've managed to rehabilitate Unity, so the bar's reasonably high.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, to what extent have they rehabilitated
Unity? They haven't rehabilitated Unity. She's still
channeled.
A completely uncontrollable, yet perky zombie girl.
Engine of destruction.
Yeah.
Low attention span. But she's helpful. Mostly.
Yeah. And well, as well as that, Skin Horse has also done conjunction with Jeffrey Channing Wells, who also, under their real name for some reason, or close to it, writes pony fanfic, and wrote a story called Contraptionology, where the mad scientist meme gets introduced into Ponyville, and the place just about flies apart. It's quite cool. So
that makes sense as a pony response to mad scientism.
Yes, it is. Yeah, some people have lower thresholds to it, but the... it's actually an abject point of view, and her attempts to create the Large Hadron Cider. The puns are pretty bad, but yes, they all have a crack at this sort of thing, and Fluttershy's Heart of the Swarm, vaguely apologetic Kerrigan.
That's already very weird.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing.
So, Pinkie Pie is a mad scientist, would be.
She's already a mad scientist. Where the hell does she keep that cannon?
I think she's the one with the most resistance.
Okay, Pinkie Pie with a lab coat would be hilarious.
Whereas I was thinking Pinkie Pie with a hump.
Yes, everyone needs their eagles. Yes. I'm pretty sure, might have to dig it up, there was a webcomic where, sort of a near future thing, where, something like Wonders of Science, where they'd identified the mimetic, invasive...
A miracle of science.
Miracle of science, that's right. The invasive, mimetic thing that is mad science. you could catch it. And treating somebody with this condition, or at least handling them, is the challenge of that story.
It would make you very good at science, but also want to take over the world in a very destructive way.
While being a total monomaniac in a particular direction.
Yeah.
So, going with the Village of the Joneses, the idea of channeling it into something like The Village from The Prisoner is an interesting idea.
Ooh.
There's actually somewhere between a penitentiary and a rehabilitation facility for the mad science.
So when you come in, you're not called Jones, but you get called Jones when you move to apparently Port Marion.
I am not a Jones. I am a human being.
It could be part of the breaking of the monomania.
By this weird architecture. That'll do it.
Maybe they're trying to rehabilitate mad scientists, try and channel their creative energy into something more useful.
Trying to break the monomania of mad science by presenting its opposite, which is apparently whales. I'm having trouble refuting the logic. I like the whole discrepancy. But anyway.
So yes, while I'm spitballing furiously here, I suspect you could run a game about mad scientists trying to take back their madness and break out of this place. And the idea of a facility capable of containing mad science...
It's kind of where you get Eureka.
Yeah.
Yeah. Contain it, channel it, make it work for the government.
So in Kev's version of the idea, your players are the police trying to figure out what the hell is going on in this village of mad science, whereas in the Ben version, potentially you are the mad scientists trying to tunnel out of.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is the mad science drill that will breach the heavens, and I don't mean metaphorically, I've got it over there.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and in Ben's versions, you are presumably the mad scientists trying to escape.
Mm.
But I hope that somebody knows how to build a teleporter. Though I guess in that context, I see Ben's one as being somewhat more of a comedy game, because, to be blunt, if they escape, the game's over. So it's either a one-shot, or if you're doing it as an extended thing, the shtick...
More of a what-are-we-doing-tonight brain.
Very much so. one of those sort of... A system that will handle that kind of episodic thing. So possibly Primetime Adventures or something like that. Something where it's okay that the plan isn't going to work. Probably by GM fiat. The drill that will breach the heavens will dig down from the village green. You'll follow the tunnel. And you come up in the basement of the pub.
Or it turns out that somewhere along the line, the drill bit has turned to cheese.
Because of somebody else's attempt.
Because of somebody else's attempt.
Yeah.
Indeed, there may be a level of nobody wanting those other glory hounds to be the ones that actually break out.
Okay, so you're also trying to block the attempts of other people? Other teams or other people in your group?
It depends how comfortable players are with inter-party competition, I suspect, because that could be hilarious.
Or just collaborative shenaniganizing, if you're going with a distinction between in-character and out-of-character stuff, if people are comfortable with that. The whole thing of...
Okay, I'm picturing a fiasco now where you're kind of handed a final scene of the players handcuffed on a bench in the village constabulary and say, another fine mess you got me into... Flashback to 72 hours earlier. Game starts.
Yes. Covered with cheese or something.
Covered with cheese.
It was a simple plan.
That could work. Yep.
Yeah.
Actually, once those storyteller cards arrive, we should totally use those as the, okay, start of the game. Draw some cards to get the circumstances surrounding the mad scientists captured. You know, what is sitting on the table or pictured in the evidence photos or being waved at them in a stern manner by the constabulary in his shiny blue uniform and his spiffy tall helmet, then bounce back to earlier that day.
That would be awesome. Because it also opens up, depending on the episode, that you have somebody who didn't try to escape today. They had a holiday. What they tried to do was supermarket shopping, but they got swept up in somebody else's thing.
Yes, and they were perusing the yogurt section when the drilling machine went a little bit too close to the surface and they plummeted down. plummeted down and landed in the spoil hopper.
Yes.
Is there a game, something, I have vague memories of a game called It Was a Simple Plan or something like that?
I think something vaguely rings a bell, but I can't remember anything about it other than that I thought the title was cool.
I'll look it up.
Because
With a name like that, I'm assuming it has something to do with...
In which you don't get the thing that you wanted to happen to...
Crimes going hilariously wrong stories. Just with...
That might actually be useful for the idea that we keep having for the P-Funk game.
Oh, yes.
You can't stop the funk. In which the players are criminals who have a variety of plans for crime, and they will at some point be stopped by George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic. But the win factor is how hard you make it for him to stop you.
If your plan could be thwarted by the expedient of George Clinton getting to a working payphone, calling you up and saying, "Hey, stop that," and you will, then the closer, even if you only get, 70% to close to victory, you may get far more points, or at least bragging value, than somebody who got 90% close to something where the three jade skulls of Ulduruk had to be assembled in order to stop you or something.
Yeah. And they had to come down in person and beat you to death with the trombone.
This all sparked from someone's comment on RPGNet that you are not immune to funk damage unless your character sheet says immunity, funk. You can't stop the funk.
Ha! Yeah.
Sorry, that was completely off topic, so...
Topic adjacent. I mean, frankly, if people don't want to listen to strange topic digressions, then they really shouldn't be listening to an awful lot of the RPG podosphere.
Yeah,
to be honest. Yeah. I mean, there are entire podcasts that are digressions.
So it's a lot like academia in that regard.
You're the only one of you who
you're the only academic here, man.
I'm
a professional schlub.
I will have acid flashbacks to Wars I Wasn't In, quietly in the corner, and we can proceed as normal.
Indeed.
So I'm willing to bet anyone in academia listening to this podcast is nodding sadly along with me at this point, so I will claim that as a win.
So noted.
Okay.
Craig, what was your cunning plan?
Well, for a while I was worried that both of you guys had also gone with the same as me, but fortunately you didn't.
It was a close thing, since I was...
missed by a hair.
Backpedaling frantically.
Well, a little bit. I started out with the same village full of all sorts of mad scientists and reanimators and grave robbers and necromancers and all this kind of thing.
Could not. It was on the card.
Well, yes, it was on the card, though that's never stopped us in the past.
That's true.
I took the Jones thing a little bit less literally and just went with, it's a small village. It's probably in Wales simply because of, if nothing else, the humorous juxtaposition of bizarre mad science and freaky events and tiny villages in Wales. And I'll be blunt, I'm basing almost everything I know about this from the movie The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain.
Research.
Yeah, let's go with that.
I figure it's probably changed a little since then, but...
I mean, that we take Torchwood and Doctor Who as fact, and very little has changed.
Yes. Anyway, yes, I went in a slightly different direction. My assumption is that the village is a bit like Save Ale in Buffy. The village is on a portal, or is very near a portal to somewhere else, or somewhere other. I don't think it's a fully-fledged Hellmouth, as in Buffy.
Okay.
I'm suspecting it's a lot more like the three of you out there among our listener who might have read it, the Mythago Wood stories by Robert Holdstock, of a place where, in a relatively normal world, relatively normal things don't happen. Strange things happen.
Okay.
From the stories, it's basically a wood where myths and legends and that sort of thing are very real. And so, yeah, you've got a village which is sitting, maybe it's on top of, I haven't really figured out where exactly the strangeness lies, even if it has a specific location. But you've got a place where, in all of the world, necromancy and reanimation and all of this stuff actually works.
Okay.
I admittedly started off with this courtesy of the book A Night in the Lonesome October by Roger Zelazny, which has a large number of very strange people gathering in a place for the opportunity to open or prevent the opening of a portal. Sort of Cthulhu mythos adjacent.
Neat.
But it had historical fictional figures and so forth?
I don't think anybody was ever specifically called out by name, but you've got the Count, who was a vampire.
So the set dressing was fairly strong.
Yeah.
Jack the Ripper was there?
Yeah, the narrator character was a dog.
Right.
And his human and the other part of the team was this guy called Jack with a knife. With his special silver blade.
Some of this is reminding me a little of Susanna Clarke's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. There's a feeling of, in that case, fairy overlaying London, historical London in this case, so that there are particular houses where where if the fairies have an interest in you, you can hear eerie music no matter where you go. You can see people out of the corner of your eye that are in the other version of that house. You can look out the window and see a forest when it's a cobbled street to everyone else. So it's kind of where the worlds come closest together.
I wasn't able to come down entirely on one side or other of who the players are, because certainly from the card, you very much get the idea that they're the cops, or they're the authorities in the village, or something like that. Or, you know, they're the normal people in the village.
Mm.
Or outsiders, if they're the person who's being
directed to somewhere. Yeah.
At some level.
Indeed, yeah, hadn't thought of the outsider element. I had the idea that if I was going to run it that way, I'd want a system that included some measure of the relationship between people. I know that Monsters and Other Childish Things has something like that, as does, oddly enough, Teenagers from Outer Space.
Smallville?
Yeah, something like that, so that if you've got people who are trying to keep the village on an even keel, keep everything happening, that on the one hand you can charge up there and you can pound on the door at dusk and you can have a frank and loud exchange of views with Count Dracula,
mm-hmm.
or the off-brand equivalent. And that'll probably work. But it's going to have an impact on things. It's going to make things a bit tense. And so possibly the way the game works, certainly if you're trying to do it as a campaign,
mm-hmm.
would be the whole thing of balancing that thing. You know, it's a bit more persuade-y and a bit less laying down the law, which I guess, thinking about it, is very much Small Village Cop, the RPG. The stakes are a shade higher. The flip side of it, I guess, is you play these very strange people who are in this town, well, village, hamlet,
keeping their heads down,
doing your own thing.
Mm.
Well, I suspect the people in the town know what's going on, know that this is a very odd place.
Mm.
You know, and if you're there doing your own thing, well, presumably you're there for a reason. Presumably there's something that you want. You know, it's not the average person who decides, I'm going to move to this strange little place I've heard about so that I can dig up bodies and try to stitch them together and bring them back to life.
Flesh collage.
Thank you, Kevin.
So you think there's probably not going to be that much of a, well, my family have lived here forever, just ordinary,
it could
ordinary
be
nuclear family type.
I, to be honest, couldn't think of that much of a story for the characters that gave any kind of jumping off point wrapped around that. Whereas the idea that you've got a bunch of people who are in this place and they all want
something.
Well, I guess you could flip it around and basically say that part of character gen is the question of why are you here? And if somebody can come up with something that would entertain them for family was here, but I've stayed because, then that might be an interesting wrinkle.
Okay. Mm. So possibly like the Dresden Files-y / Fate-y background aspects.
Yeah.
Of this is how. Okay, yeah, I can see that.
Mm. You could probably also build quite a lot. There was a game that you told me about, Craig, where the GM basically handed out a list of questions to everybody of things like, what are you looking forward to about this job? What is it about this client that disturbs you? That kind of thing. You could probably build quite a lot about not only the characters, but the wood itself.
I know which one it was, yes. It was one of the hosts from Fear the Boot by the name of Chad, who does incredibly improvised games.
Mm.
Just astonishingly improvised. That was his Inception game, where he had no idea what the job that they were doing on the Inception run was prior to looking at these bits of paper.
It's a mechanic that I absolutely adore. I would love to have a play with it personally.
I think the one that came up in the Inception game was that he had two people responded to the what are you uneasy about with this job, and somebody said, I'm not sure I like the idea of doing this with someone right before their wedding, and somebody else said, I'm not comfortable working on a child. And it's kind of, both of these facts are true. What does that even mean? Okay. Let's work with this.
Okay, yeah, that has a certain something to it.
Yeah. I mean, is this a place where specifically the laws of life and death don't work, or is this a place where quite a lot of the normal physical laws don't work properly?
I kind of get the idea that if you're there and you try hard enough, and maybe if you find just the right spot, because that's kind of increases the necessity for people to interact with the environment and with each other,
mm-hmm.
that you can get stuff done that just couldn't happen anywhere else. Yeah, anywhere else, you go and you dig up the index fingers of somebody who's been dead for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
you've dug up the index fingers of somebody who's been dead for 20 years. Good luck to you. In this place, if maybe you find the right graveyard to do this in and do it at just the right phase of the moon, you can use them as part of a locating spell.
Okay. This is also magic that you could take out into the world from the wood. It's not confined to the wood.
Maybe not very far. I mean, maybe it's not a wood, maybe it's the village. I just sort of picked the wood because the Robert Holdstock book has this wood, and the wood is vastly bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I think if you go far enough, you get to the Ice Age.
Right.
Yeah.
Take hiking boots. And a parka.
Very much so. Also a spear. And, you know, things from the wood, I think, could leave, but they tend to fade away when they get too far. So maybe all of these very strange people are here because it's the only place they can be.
So shades of fever dream as well.
How so?
It's the idea of some people only have a tenuous reality on the ship. I think I'm thinking of a version of the fever dream that appears in the comic Promethea as part of Alan Moore's explanation of the afterlife. As seen through a very specific lens. It's
okay.
Very cool comic book.
Yeah, I jumped to the George R. R. Martin story and thought, what do vampires on riverboats? I'm missing something here and I'm sure it's cool. I don't remember that at all. Okay, yes, I have not read enough Promethea, obviously. Should probably fix that.
Probably.
So yeah, that was my idea.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not quite a bunch of unconnected fragments so much as a great big splodge of, of interspersed bits.
I think it's neat. I mean, particularly if we go with flipping it around on the players of why are you here, and you get all these people who are looking for something, they're doing something else, and somebody else pops up with, I'm a red cap, I can't live anywhere else.
I hadn't thought about it from the other side. Yeah, if it's the one place in the quote-unquote real world that a mythological creature could exist. Oh, wow. What does that person want? Well, they might just want this weird little village to get bigger.
Yep.
Okay, so you have mythological people who are attempting to bring in supermarkets or a bypass or something.
No, either how do we make this village more like these places that I've heard about and which I find fascinating but I will never get to because I cannot exist there, or maybe it's a, how do I expand the borders of this place?
Hmm. Yeah.
It could just be as simple as I really, really, really want to lobby for a decent internet connection so I can buy things from Amazon.
That is fair. No, I am heavily involved in my World of Warcraft guild, and they are getting really sick at the constant link drops, because as near as I can tell, the phone line in here is made out of discarded tin cans and old railway line.
Running the packets down the line by an elderly hamster.
Yes.
Well, you know, depending on how the wood works, that might actually be how the internet works about it. Just imagining a chain of hamsters carrying glowing packets with elf fighting in it or something. That
would be cool. Nice. That's peripherally reminded me of playing Torg many years ago. Anybody come across that at all?
Nope.
Role-playing in the Possibility War?
That's the one. Yeah, the idea was some vaguely Scientology-sounding aliens or something had invaded Earth, and by imposing new areas of reality, which changed axioms, and you had technological, magical, social one, I think, as well, and basically it moves the levers so that technology works better or not as well. And you had a place like the France had been absorbed into the cyber papacy.
That's where that was from!
Which was, it had sort of, the faith was very strong, magic was very, and sort of technology was very complex and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
While America disappeared into the living land, where unless you were what was known as a storm knight, somebody who could impose their own reality locally, there was no technology. A pointed stick was the cutting edge, as it were, of technology. Normal folks just get normal folks just get subsumed into this new world. The idiom that's been created, they just...
Okay.
And Stormites are roaming around trying to stop trying to recall the actual political or the entity that was driving this, was trying to stop the bad guys from making the place worse. But it was pretty bad already.
Okay. So you have these little bubbles of alternate realities, and if you're there when the switch gets thrown, it's always been that way?
Pretty much, yeah. As far as you're concerned, your reality has been rewritten.
Huh.
And the bubbles were not little, though. The bubbles were big ass.
Continental.
Pretty big. I mean, okay. The Isle had changed Britain into an Arthurian fantasy realm.
Uh-huh.
Japan was now a cyberpunk future, and Egypt was now a pulp fiction pulp adventure style storyland.
Uh-huh.
So it is a broad excuse for a cleptover setting.
Oh, yeah. Right. So yes, Disjointed was its middle name, and you would end up with characters from all of the different realms trucking around from place to place doing the things. So you would have different, very characters from wildly different genres doing those sorts of things. Hmm. So That's the idea of imposing an axiom onto the world and kind of trying to spread out your thing.
I can see that working for Craig's idea of having sort of a small group of various mythological creatures lobbying to try and figure out ways to spread the word or try and figure out ways to bring the world to the village in some ways.
It is a neat idea.
Yeah.
Yay!
With Ben's idea of the escape from Port Merion thing, my brain moved away from the whole Jones concept, and I'm having trouble imagining it as anything other than the middle prison.
Middleman crossed with the prisoner.
Well, yeah, where do these problem children from... What was the line from the middleman that we deal with all threats?
Intra, extra, and juxtaterrestrial.
Yeah, and all threats intra, extra, and juxtaterrestrial get put once their plans, which are always elegance in their simplicity, fail. Where do they get put?
I kind of get the impression that the middleman just chains them to a gurney, hands them to Ida, and she puts them in a vacuum tube. I don't know where...
Which goes?
Where?
Apparently to Port Merion. Okay.
Yes! So, warehouse 13 for living things.
Yes!
Great.
Yeah. But it's just also because the middleman is a vibe for that kind of thing, but on the flip side of it would be really, really neat.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Particularly if we have this whole kind of storyteller cards of, we go back to 3 days earlier. How do we wind up chained up in the floor of the pub covered in cheese? And one of the cards is always elegance and simplicity.
Actually, I kind of like the idea that you have a card for each of the players, one of which is elegance in its simplicity, and sort of you have a blind draw to see whose plan this was.
I like it.
The elegance card.
So who everybody else is glaring at the end of the episode.
Harking back to earlier, I was impressed by your description of having a mob of torch and pitchfork bearing mad scientists, because how you get to that...
Oh, that's easy. Drop out the internet and the power.
Or have somebody stealing their tools.
Or some have somebody indeed, stealing indeed. Their tools.
It's not like, they said I was mad. It's like, they said they were mad. They were right.
Yeah, I'm just imagining the view from the pub of the relatively normal people of one mad scientist running down the street with his mouth slurp of beer. Slurp of beer.
Ah, so it's Wednesday.
Yeah.
What did he do? Well, as near as I can tell, he managed to reanimate the entire graveyard in one go. Sounds so bad. Yeah, but, you know, other people had plans for that graveyard, and an awful lot of failed experiments got buried there. His spell wasn't very specific as to what to reanimate.
Yes, police trying to, or just anybody, trying to wrangle the conflict over who's bogarting all the corpses would be an entertaining one.
You think he is stealing your corpses. Why is it that I am working in a town where I have ever had to utter this phrase? I want you to know that I hate you all.
And somebody else pops up, well, it's an example of the tragedy of the commons, really.
Take him outside and have him shot.
Rural village. Who's got guns? Farmers? Who else? Farmers' mums?
Yeah.
Come in here, we're planning to tip over the apple cart. Oh yeah, because we all grow apples around here. Your dad does. And raspberries. I need to rewatch that film. Anyway, I got nothing else.
Nope.
I think we're good.
So we're all full up on brilliant ideas for the week.
Apparently. And what's only left is the Big Red Couch special event.
What?
Brought to you by Ben and his recent purchase.
Right.
He's bought a deodorant-flavoured energy drink.
As far as
we can tell. We don't know it's deodorant flavoured, it just...
is using a lot of the same imagery on the can.
Yes, it is, kind of.
The company V, who have brought us graphite flavour, which is either tasting of drawing equipment or body spray. We're not sure.
One or the other.
Or apparently possibly has... dry lubricant.
Ah!
Machine parts! Don't give me that look!
We will continue to give you that look for hours, okay? Apparently it says Peruvian maca in it, which is...
That's new.
That makes all the difference.
Indeed, indeed. The other...
apparently tastes like body spray.
Or pencils.
Or pencils.
For the uninitiated, V is a local product which comes in a green can and is the colour of radioactive waste. which I used to drink way too much of.
And by used to, we mean...
last week.
That was months ago now.
Okay.
I no longer bleed that colour.
Okay.
They've done a number of special editions and other flavours, including black, which I only drink if I want to stay awake and hate myself at the same time, and a few other berry-flavoured things, which I think are weak sauce, but other folks like. I get the weird idea, the way they do these limited runs is actually based on the half-life of some material they're using.
That would make sense, actually, because I can remember watching, I think it was Dog, pouring the into a clear-sided container and thinking, I can't believe he's doing that to himself voluntarily in such a way that he can see what he's doing.
No, yeah,
it was glowing.
It's like the universal rule, never drink Mountain Dew from a clear-sided container.
Yeah.
I'm kind of impressed with the company that makes V on the grounds that only they could come up with a flavour that they don't actually know what it is, and they use that as a marketing thing, because I'm sure that they don't... There was a contest for a while of blue-flavoured V. What flavour is that? Write in. Whoever wins will have a prize. And I'm thinking, you bastards don't actually know, do you?
I think the closest was...
fruity.
Yeah, it was kind of like sucking on a orange ice block wrapper 2 or 3 days after it'd been opened.
Oh.
Wow. <Yeah. laughs> Whereas Iron Brew really was like licking the outflow pipe of an industrial plant.
All right,
it's your fault for buying the stuff on impulse.
It was.
We don't get stuff from that end of the world here very often.
Yes, but it's called Iron Brew. I thought, that has to be imaginary. What does this taste like? Oh, God, no wonder they're shipping it here.
All right, so without further ado, and let's just state that we have no connection with the organisation that creates this beverage.
Yes.
Open it already.
This is quality.
Oh, God, my eyes!
It's not glowing. That's a good sign.
Apparently it has a powerful nose.
Ben's turning colours, internet.
Oh. I think his eyebrows just caught fire.
His nostril hairs are curling.
How does it smell, Ben? Tell people in Radioland.
Sweet mother of Zod. You guys familiar with Barocca, right? The effervescent stuff? Remember, you know, that you drop the
puck.
Puck, whatever it is, into the water, and it effervesces violently, and then you're feeling really grotty, so you want to drink it as fast as possible, and you try to spill it down, you get a mouthful of carbon dioxide first.
Right, so you just took a hit of carbon dioxide by opening the can.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
It does kind of taste like Barocca, though.
So, bicarb and something that may have been orange once.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the faux orange you get in vitamin tablets.
So why have they called it graphite, for crying out loud?
To market to men.
It's less gritty than I was expecting.
Yeah, they'll be collecting at the bottom of the can.
I would have gone with graphene myself. That's even cooler.
It's like graphite, but
20% cooler.
20% cooler.
So what's the verdict on V graphite?
Not as bad as it could have been.
Yeah, not bad.
Okay.
I can't think of a way of topping that for explosive and hard-hitting internet radio content.
Thanks for joining us. See you in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
Space wreck exploration.
Ooh.
Intriguing.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to horde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!